now for something completely different. The broadcasting veteran who taught Joe Rogan absolutely nothing, Brian Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all sexes, and especially all of you heading over the interstates and through the subdivisions, carrying extra strength tryptophan to your in-laws' Thanksgiving festivities. Welcome to the Happy Birthday episode of The Two and Only, the technologically impaired podcast that has defied the expertise of IT departments around the world as we begin another slide down the razor blade of life, an experience second only to the joy of having the Washington Post as your exclusive news source. Winner of the 2023 Hillary Clinton Hard Drive Demolition Derby and an insufficient number of well-deserved talk show awards, I am your host, Brian Wilson, surfboard not included. Joining me once again is the FBI's most wanted investigative journalist, the 5,000-word bomb for the New York Post, and for the 10th consecutive year, the first person to be publicly uninvited to the Washington Post Christmas party. Sporting his seasonally decorated facial shrubbery, complete with blinking lights, and most importantly, author of his soon-to-be-released 11th bestseller, The Unexpurgated Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the impervious James Bovard. Welcome, James.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me back on Hard Drive Demolition Derby.
Yep.
Oh, there's so much bitterness behind that phrase.
You are so correct. And better bitterness than the violence that tends to follow it. That's all I can suggest. Hey, here we are on the verge of another gut-busting tea day, and we're all ready to be thankful for some definitive news, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, about the greatly anticipated last rites. What's the latest?
I'm hoping it's available for pre-order next week.
Ah!
It's been going back and forth with editors, and there's lots of nice things I could say, but progress is done, and hopefully there's it goes live next week.
Yes, the picture of patience and propriety as Mr. Bovard dealing with his very sympathetic editors, which we've already established. Let me see, how exactly does that work? I mean, obviously you'll tell us when we get together next week and we'll make the announcement, but so you go to Amazon and there will be a pre-order form you can fill out, or go to the jimbovard.com? How does that work?
Yeah, good question. I'm not entirely sure. I think it's going to be available to pre-order. It's going to be available in hardback, paperback, and as an ebook, Kindle. Wow. And other ebook formats. So it's going to be across the board. And so it should have be covered by Prime shipping. If you're a Prime member, you get free shipping. I guess that doesn't help for an ebook.
No, not much. And let me say, as a Prime member, don't take them at their word. And when they say, congratulations, you got free shipping, it'll be there on Tuesday. Start paying attention around Thursday.
It is. Yeah, it's very important to keep in mind that Amazon doesn't specify which Tuesday.
That's true. That's exactly right. That's right. And with holidays coming up, timing is everything. So bear that in mind, but we'll have specifics. Hopefully, I share Mr. Bovard's undying hope that we'll have really definitive, concrete URL type news come next week. I think I speak for the majority of listeners when I say your last three supernovas on your poignant visit to Waco, another romantic adventure with your admirers at the TSA, and your most recent tragic romance comedy novella about poor Hunter Biden have been the stuff important awards are given. I hope there's some venue, some organization that hands out that kind of stuff. I think your mantle would look good with some solid gold trophy up there.
Thanks very much. That's very kind. I'm not. I think the kind of things I write tend to are not smiled upon by the judges for most of those awards. But what the hell? As long as I hear nice things from you, that's all that matters.
Well, more importantly, the check doesn't bounce. That's why I look at it. Yeah. Well, I do think there should be. Maybe that's something I could get started with some of my colleagues and former colleagues in talk radio, because I know that once this book comes out, I am positive you're going to have an avalanche of fellow talk showers and podcasters around the country begging and pleading for your time and review of the content. Maybe maybe that'd be it. I'll just keep following where you are and who you're talking to, and then I'll drop them an email saying, hey, would you like to get behind an effort to form an organization, a committee of something? It would be easy enough to get the coverage, where every year we make awards for people who actually put out poignant stuff that really informs the readership or the listening audience as to the skullduggery and so on that's going on in Washington and other locations. So I'm going to really try that, try and push that.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, we did our best to salvage the ill-fated conversation we had last week about Waco and the TSA. And while that's lost forever, thanks to the genius of computers, they are preserved on jimbovard.com for those of you who have not had the pleasure. Now that a Middle East ceasefire has been arranged, do you think your alleged colleagues in the mainstream media area will be pivoting back to the forgotten plight of poor President Zelensky and that other war in that other country we're funding?
I think there's a lot of people holding their breath on that, but I don't think so. I think there is the focus is going to be shifting to the presidential campaign with whether or not Joe Biden can walk across stages and handle, official ceremonies without a total collapse. I think there's going to be a number of other things that preempt the being able to bring back the focus on the Ukraine war. So,
yeah, well, I just kind of thinking about all the money we have invested over there. It'd be nice to get an update now and then. But the things I read is that Zelensky's walking around with a crying towel because he's running out of cannon fodder and all the rest. And maybe he and the evil Premier Putin will be able to get together and carve up what's left of the pockmarks on that country. But either way, I got to say that I did hear a report that we taxpayers are now also funding, along with all the other government expenses, we're now going to be paying for the teachers, the pensions, the health care, their version of Social Security, and all the other benefits for whoever's left in the Ukraine. I think that's really, really great news. I think we should all be excited about, we are living in a country with rulers who remain unfazed by an unpayable $33 trillion debt. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the just as long as the financial collapse doesn't happen before the members of Congress get reelected, it doesn't matter to them. So, I mean, the folks here simply don't care about the financial wreckage which they are begetting to the American people. So,
yeah, true that.
And most of the media is ignoring it as well. So, it's frustrating.
Yeah, well, finances are so difficult to understand, by people with journalism degrees. But the fact is that what I'm reading is an awful lot of the current population of both ends of the hall in Congress, there's a good many of them that are starting to bail. So I think considering the finances, they're going to take the money and run.
Well, it'd certainly be good to see them leave. So because most of them have been a menace for American prosperity and certainly the Bill of Rights. So it'd be great to get some fresh blood. I don't know that we'll get nearly as much as we need, but, it's a start.
Got to start somewhere. Well, I should have said take the money and not run, but it doesn't really matter. Let's turn to your latest review of the WAPO's boohoo about the burden of being Biden. Having to carry around the famous name of a tough, that's a tough slog. I can relate. I've been a beach boy since 1961.
Oh, that's great. That's true. That's a very good tie-in. You're three steps ahead of me.
And I didn't get any of the benefits either. Not like Hunter, but that was, you pointed out, that was kind of like the WAPO's first line of defense, right? That it was just so sad that Hunter got born with the burden of being a Biden. That enough was tough enough due to the notoriety of his incompetent father.
Yeah, well, it was, this is a story that came out in the Washington Post on Saturday. It was almost 5,000 words long. It was a multi-thousand word pity party for Hunter Biden, basically. And there were a couple lines in there that I just found so precious. The Washington Post said that Hunter's relationship with his own last name has invited burdens and scrutiny. And it's just, I was just sad that my violin is at the repair shop. Ooh. So I wouldn't be able to play a little riff on that. But you go and take millions of dollars of payoffs from shady foreigners But then folks ask about, because of your last name, folks give you grief. So life is unfair.
Well, true enough. And I don't know about the grief. I thought with a name like that, they gave him money, not grief. You know, I don't recall the grief part so much. As a matter of fact, I thought you brought out in the piece that that whoever it was that wrote that dribble for the Washington Post was providing an awful lot of shade for, you know, how difficult it was, and the fact that, you know, they keep talking about, where's the evidence? Where's the money? All the Democrats are saying that you had all these investigations. Where's the evidence? Where's the money? And I think you had some comment about that.
Yeah, well, it was a very strange piece. Matt Beiser was the reporter. There were a lot of editors involved in this piece, and they also signed off on this, which is, there were some howlers in there. There was a throwaway line that Hunter Biden has shied away from taking advantage of the Biden name too directly. And so I'm thinking, okay, so he didn't take out neon light advertisements in Times Square. But if you look at the record of his hustling, which has been exposed by his laptop, some of the subpoenas, some of the other court procedures, it's simply bizarre that the Post would insist that that he was clean. And Joe Biden has changed his storyline on his son's business and his son's corruption so many times, and yet the Post was just desperate to exonerate President Biden.
Well, I find it interesting when anytime a newspaper or some TV anchor or commentator or something like that starts getting into the structure of employing different adverbs, you know, in order to shade the true meaning of what they're trying to say, like the quote you had, it's time to been protected with the Biden name and shied away from taking advantage too directly. What does that mean, too directly? About a little bit directly, kind of directly, sort of directly? Not, yeah, but it's the variance within that, it leads you to one conclusion or the opposite.
I mean, it's like that they're splitting hairs. One of the things I found amusing about the piece is it relied on so many anonymous people to make statements. And there were almost all the anonymous statements were whitewashing Hunter Biden. The Post trotted out an anonymous former business associate of Hunter who said that the stuff Hunter was doing was completely normal. And if you can't trust an unnamed Hunter Biden accomplice, who can you trust?
That is so true. That is absolutely true. And I find that the mainstream media, you know, across the board, whether it's broadcast or print, goes to that. I think New York Times is still leading in that race of citing unnamed sources, sources didn't want to be named, sources that weren't allowed to speak on the subject, that remain anonymous, all this. It's kind of like when the director of the FBI gets up and he says, well, we don't comment on ongoing investigations. It's the constant camouflage that these people use to keep from putting their foot in it.
Yeah, and it's just, and to see how far that they went and how far the Washington Post went, the Washington Post was talking about how Hunter arranged for Mexican businessmen, including a billionaire Carlos Slim, who bailed out the New York Times, to have breakfast with his father, with the vice president. And the Post whitewashes that by quoting an anonymous person who was familiar with the encounters said that those breakfast meetings were not substantive. Instead, the source says it was way more. My friends are in town. Is it all right if we come for breakfast? It was, yeah, of course.
Bring a happy meal. Sure, yeah. But I have one question about that I saw the part about Carlos Slim. Is that the proper pronunciation? Is that a short I or a long I? I'm just curious. Yeah,
whatever. I almost failed Spanish 2 years in a row in high school. So
well, I'm the wrong dude. I did it 4 years in a row. That's what I was asking. But I can still say mucho gusto when I'm ordering my beer. But categorizing the WAPO, as you did, as the DC's Delphic Oracle, comparison that may be lost on some of our Gen Z listeners. Certainly that must have allayed even a soupçon of skepticism from the Joe Sixpack family that Hunter and Dad were actually playing with dirty money, don't you think?
Yeah, well, it's funny how the Washington Post was using an Alice in Wonderland sliding scale of active participant, because the Post said that they had done this investigation, and they found no sign that Joe Biden was an active participant in his son's business efforts. And this is, I mean, they have changed the standard so many times. And it used to be that he had no involvement. Oh, he was there at the meetings, but they only talked about the weather, maybe a few jokes about the Redskins, who knows. But you have all these meetings with folks and you claim you got no involvement with the business. It's like, you know, that's not something which a federal prosecutor would say if they were looking at material support of terrorism.
No, not unless they were the former director of the FBI, I guess.
If you had any dealings with the terrorists, boom, your ass is going down.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it seems to me that there's great discretion on the part of reporters and even some congressmen and senators and all the rest of that as to, you know, what subjects are worthy of a deep dive. I mean, they'll go back 20 years, 10 years to find some comment on Facebook or Twitter or something like that to indict or besmirch somebody that they don't like. But despite the mountain of evidence that's turned up from laptops and witnesses, eyewitness testimony, the Bubulinskis, those type of people, this is all discarded because I think you pointed out in the article, the only reason they could be converted, they meaning like Democrats and so on, would be if Biden was caught with, you know, $10 million in yens or yawns or something in his pocket. But the one thing, when you talk about defining things narrowly, Congress and the Supreme Court and the distinction between the two, you mentioned Representative William Jefferson, who was caught with $90,000 in bribes stashed in his freezer. Now, I have to take a little bit of exception to that because, as most people probably don't know, Representative Jefferson was representing Orleans Parish. And that, of course, is down over in my old stomping grounds. And the fact is that Orleans Parish is the home to the city and the passenger train of the same name. And I would have thought that with your worldly travels, you would be aware of the legendary humidity that covers that area. Despite the poverty, most people use their freezers for cold cash storage to protect them from shrinkage of Bidenomics and the occasional uninvited midnight visitor. So I would think that inmate Jefferson number 29840 was pretty much acting in harmony with current standards, local standards.
Well, the news reports did say the money was wrapped in tinfoil, so maybe you're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think they brought out the fact that it was also adjacent to catfish, and those things are generally frozen that way and keep it all together. And that's when you say something's fishy about this money, that's how that cliche.
Well, that's good. I'd not heard that before.
Yeah. Well, that's because you don't spend enough time in New Orleans, Jim. You need to get down there more often. It's a hell of a place to hang out, and they've got great cigars and some really exciting drinks. Well, look, the clock on the floor is reminding me our studio rental time is about to run out, and our microphones will all explode automatically as a safety precaution. But before the Jim Bovard Memorial Curtain of Mercy comes crashing down on this episode of The Two and Only, make sure you put a note on your calendar to be with us next week for what we hope will be the grand announcement of the arrival of Last Rites, The Death of American Liberty. We'll get all the details about pre-order and shipment and so on, whether or not this thing is going to be there in time for stocking stuffing. And I was thinking you might want to get some consideration about a twofer for Christmas. You got Lost Rites from 1994, when Mr. Bovard and I kind of sort of first came to know one another, and Last Rites, which is about to make its debut. You take them together, and that twofer thing, it would be a real treat for the brain for Christmas time, and would last well into the year, depending upon how quickly you read. So give that some thought. If you're not picky about what you feed your brain, you can consider grabbing copies of my two sporadically selling print efforts, Watercolor Memories and 50 Stories, 50 Years in Radio. They're at Amazon and certain illegal points of entry or wherever husky young men of fighting age are coming into America. If you are on a tight budget, thanks to Bidenomics, a free subscription to Brian Wilson Writes at Substack.com is still out there waiting for you. Members of today's studio audience each receive a holiday decorated sympathy card for Hunter Biden, picturing two stuffed turkeys gorging on foreign currency. For Jim Bovard, I'm still Brian Wilson, reminding you Washington, D.C. is a great place to live if you're not afraid to die.